Welcome to another edition of
A Noise from the Deep,
the Greenleaf Music Podcast. We're talking to Jeff Countryman today. That was his music. Hi, Jeff.
Hey, how are you?
Are we recording?
I hope so. That's supposed to be my job today.
Oh, I see.
Resident expert.
Oh, boy.
So we were listening to Tree Houses.
Oh, cool.
What, is that a record?
Sort of. I mean, it's just a thing I put on a USB drive that's constantly changing and growing. So it's just something I have as a record of music that I make in the midst of the other stuff I'm running around doing.
So you do a lot of different stuff.
Kind of, yeah. I'm the underground utility guy of the music scene these days. That's what I like to think of myself
underground
as.
Utility.
How so?
You know, everything from fixing computers to playing with any number of bands and all that kind of thing. So I'm just running around doing whatever people ask me to do, kind of. I say yes to a lot of things.
Kind of like being a New York City musician.
Yeah, I guess so. Right. I guess so. Just with a lot more taking photos and fixing computers than some people.
So some people, like in the Greenleaf music listening community, will remember you because you were on the road with some of my bands for a good few years there.
Yeah.
And manning the merchandise table and helping out and doing sound and also playing with the band in Keystone. You were playing the Mojo.
The Mojo, yeah.
For Spark of Being.
Yep, that's right.
And doing front of house sound.
And running the video sometimes.
And running the video.
Yeah, yeah.
Was that a hard band to deal with sound-wise?
Yeah, a little bit. I mean, with things like DJ Brad Jones's, Olive Sounds, because I was actually triggering his sounds at the same time, sort of on cue with the stuff.
That would be DJ Olive to you, right?
Yes, DJ Olive.
Okay. Just checking.
Sorry. Sir DJ Olive. Yes. I was running his sounds and all that stuff at the same time as doing the sound. And, you know, when you're dealing with, like, the baby bass, Brad Jones is playing the baby bass, which is kind of a weird instrument to do, and it's a more intense sort of... It's a pretty, you know, in-your-face kind of band.
Right.
So you're dealing with a lot. And mixing that all in, like finding a place for Adam's sounds at the same time you're running all those samples
and
all those things.
That would be Adam Benjamin.
It's Sir Adam Benjamin.
Yeah. Okay. Right, because he was playing Rhodes and a ton of effects.
Yeah, tons of stuff. So there's like a lot of ambience going on at the same time that everything else is happening. So, yeah, I mean, it was pretty locked in because I had actually recorded the record as well. So I was pretty familiar with that.
That's a great sounding record.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, well, that was Dave's music, so that's all that really matters.
Oh, shucks. That's Sir Dave.
Sir Dave.
Also, another thing that we spent some time figuring out with that band was getting click sometimes to Gene Lake, the drummer.
Yeah, that was one of those things.
You know, and it was my decision that he would be the only one that would hear the click. Because I felt like then we would all be free to play a little more loosely, but he would be locked into a beat.
Well, and thank God too, because running click to everyone would have been just a disaster. It was hard enough to get like a mixer and then to, you know, get the Italians to pay attention to me while I wanted to run them a headphone lineup on the stage.
Why are you dissing the Italians?
Oh, you know, I
no,
got nothing
but I mean,
against
to
them.
Be to be fair, it was a tricky everywhere. And,
because
we'd have to feed the click into an earpiece. And then make sure that it wasn't coming out of any live speaker anywhere.
There were several times where we would get like the monitor mix guy would be sort of having to run that because it wouldn't be able to run.
Again, you're going
to
blame it on somebody else?
Some Italian monitor mix guy.
It's the Oakland A's, I think.
No, they've done nothing wrong.
Oh, okay.
Except for loss. Right.
So anyway, that was great. But you also work at Saturday Night Live?
I do, yeah. I've been there for 10 years now.
Wow.
But I guarantee if you ask 90% of the people there who I am, they would say I'm not sure that he worked there because I'm just there.
It's probably
weird
to your favor though, right?
Well, a little bit. I sneak around. Yeah, I get everything done, but I'm there weird hours. I've been the I started there as an intern actually because my teacher at NYU was Lenny Pickett, so and then I started doing the librarian job when his son left, so I organized the music for the band, and then after that the copyist left to go to 30 Rock. So I took over for that position, and then I also play saxophone for them when they need me to, alto or Barry. So
great.
Yeah, it's a fun gig.
So the librarian job there is, they must have a pretty huge library of
charts. Yeah, like 880 songs or something over the years that they've been there since the 30 years.
So your responsibility is to get the music onto the stands and then get it properly filed at the end of the night.
Yeah, that's pretty much as simple as it is. I mean, it's a lot of, it's like a clerical job. It's a lot of filing and figuring out what's going on and
but
taping.
But you do copy work too.
Yeah, yeah.
So whenever there's music in a sketch.
Right.
You're the one making the charts.
Yeah, 90% of the time now. And that varies. That can be anything from me showing up and them giving me a score that just has, you know, whatever on it, and I just put it in the computer and spit it out for all the musicians. Or I'm in, you know, last 2 weeks ago, it was like, here's a MIDI file, turn this into parts for everybody quickly, and then come down to the rehearsal, watch the rehearsal. We're going to arrange it on the fly as we're going. We're going to see where the cues need to be, what vocal cues need to happen here. And we're sort of like arranging as we go, and then everybody gets the final result after that. So it can be very involved, or it can be very not involved.
Right. You sent me what looked like sort of a quickly scrawled email message. Was it last week that you handed Sir Paul McCartney the wrong set of lyrics to the Chipmunks Christmas song?
I happened to be on stage. Yeah. I happened to be on stage while Paul McCartney was asking what the lyrics were, and I was really just thinking, man, I know these lyrics. I'm going to tell him, and I gave him the wrong lyrics. He was fine with it. He was totally cool.
Another one that you told me was that sketch, What's Up With That?
Yeah.
Which is one of my absolute favorite sketches of all time, and that you do the copy work for it.
I sure
and
do.
And it's basically like 6,822 bars of What's Up With That, and a hi-hat.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, recurring skits like that are great, because I just like, oh, let's add these four bars, and then there's a whole new chart. So it makes it an easy one for us to do over
and
over.
That's really fun.
Yeah.
Okay, so you also... you worked for Fela?
I was the copyist for Fela slash transcriptionist for Fela. Yeah, which was it was like a year-long process. I think we finished the book when the show closed.
With Antibalas.
With Antibalas and the guys, Jordan and AJ.
Sir
AJ.
Would be AJ.
Yeah.
Okay, we'll just leave it at that. I noticed that you've also done some quite serious work for Charmin Toilet Tissue.
Yeah, I work for them. That's about as serious as it is.
Was that a squeeze? Or?
No, I mean, they have a lock on, there's a company called Dandelion Music that I work for that Jenny Moldau runs, that I actually play, Brad Jones plays in her band, we do Charmin ads. So I'm playing sax on, you'll hear me on some of those ones.
We'll play a little bit of that.
I hope not. Oh, boy.
Okay, we're back. So you also you worked with T.I. and Wu-Tang Clan?
I did, with some random recordings with those guys.
Wow.
Yeah, that was pretty fun. I did the Wu-Tang Clan was like one of those ones where you go in and there's lots and lots of people in the booth smoking a lot of weed. You don't know who anybody is, and they just like play a track, and you just randomly play, and it's pretty fun. So.
And the Polka Brothers.
That's
notably.
A band. That's a band that I work with.
Eitan and the Embassy.
That's another band that I work with.
So I don't know how you do all this and you still maintain a very high level of Star Wars obsession.
That's true. That's the most important thing. I think that's actually the thing that glues it all together in the end. Well, maybe not. Probably not at all, actually. That's the thing that makes my wife mad because I have too many R2-D2s.
To always say Star Trek when you were around just to get your goat, and then I realized that it actually wasn't funny to you.
I was personally offended by that. How could you?
Boom, boom,
Dave.
Boom, boom.
You can't
boom,
see
boom,
me making the boom, con, the con face, but
he's one more interesting thing that we did together was the Live at the Jazz Standard week in 2006. We recorded every set, and it was up online the next day by noon.
Yeah.
That was the goal.
I don't know if you knew that, that was the birth. You could probably tell by the greenness of me and Dan Tyler.
I'm glad you didn't tell me at the time.
I know. I was skin of the teeth the whole time. Yeah, it was an interesting time. That was, I don't think we slept at all that entire week, but it was fun.
Nerdy question.
Okay.
You also, you know, because you're a copyist and that's one of the earliest things that we did together, you were working on the Kenny Werner record Lawn Chair Society.
Yeah.
And doing charts, and then you did helped me out a lot with my notation software,
right.
Sibelius.
Right.
And so I wonder if you have the inside story on what's happening with
Well, you know, currently it's stopped developing. So Sibelius 7 is the last iteration, unfortunately. I mean, unfortunately because it left off on sort of a bad note. It's sort of a weird version of the software. It's usable, but it's a little weird. But basically what happened was they left. Steinberg actually bought all of the developers. So they're all over at Steinberg now in, I think they're in Germany. Mm-hmm. And the whole team of Sibelius people is over there. And they're developing a new software that's based, it's like, of course, based exactly on Sibelius. They're coming up with their own fonts and things like this because they have to. But so it's in development. Mm-hmm. And actually, you've been a part of developing it because we've gone back and forth with you. Dave and I, for the audience out there, we go back and forth with email questions about things, that how they work in Sibelius, et cetera. And I'll email their lead developer is Daniel Spreadbury. And I can, just having a relationship with over the years, I'll email him things that we don't like about Sibelius 7 or that we'd like to change or we'd like to see in a new version. And they've actually been... he's been paying pretty close attention. So hopefully the new, whatever they come up with should be like very focused and very, very good software.
Do you think it'll work with Sibelius 7?
Probably
files?
Not. I mean, you know, it's
really,
already,
yeah.
I wouldn't, I mean, Music XML is coming along pretty well now. So it, hopefully there will be some sort of transition
like
or
an
translated
open source kind of thing. Maybe?
Yeah, I would hope. I would really hope. Yeah. And I'm also hoping that they're moving into the fact that they know that, okay, so we need to be developing this for like iPad and things like that. This needs to be part of our platform. So I'm hoping that's what they're doing. It's unclear at this point because I think there's so much to tackle with building from sort of the ground up, you know,
right.
But I'm hoping I'm not really sure. It would be interesting if they did that. I would hope, but we'll see.
Yeah. I like Sibelius 7.
But I
basically,
did you start on it?
I didn't. I started with Sibelius 5.
Oh, wow. So you did come. That's
I went from Finale to Sibelius 5 and I was really unhappy about the transition only because I'm sort of a creature of habit.
Yeah.
But I also think that my needs in terms of a notation software are considerably lower than say Dave's or
right,
what
yeah.
We do.
Well, 7 has a lot of good things. I think more of the problem with is the interface. I think that's what you'll find a lot of
which
people
I don't
saying.
Use at all.
Yeah, but the good thing about it, one thing that's huge for, like we talked about SNL, is that the text stuff in that is amazing. Because I have to do all kinds of stuff where I'm talking about word cues, and I need to be able to blow up this text and not this one and all these things really quickly, and that's why I actually really like it. But other than that, a lot of things disappeared, and it feels a little bit like a funny, you know, stunted growth kind of thing. Mm-hmm. It didn't really move to a new thing.
I'm still at Sibelius 6 because I saw what was happening at 7 and decided to just stay where I was.
Yeah, and I hear that from a lot of people. Sometimes you got to take the plunge for compatibility.
But I got to say, I started on Sibelius 3, and it's come a long way, and it works really well. And, you know, all the publishing that we're doing at the website of all my books of charts,
right.
You know, it's all done in Sibelius. It's great.
Yeah, I mean, it's the go-to thing. I used to use Music Notes. Do you guys remember Music Notes? That was amazing.
I used to use Atari Notator. Seriously.
That's
in the early
thing.
90s.
Is that really a thing?
Yeah.
Oh
well, that's
God.
What
like a cartridge
it became Logic.
Really?
Yeah. It was Atari Notator.
Oh, yeah. Wow.
Was I got to check that software.
Out. Man.
Well, I don't think you need to check it out.
No.
Because and then the sad thing is I have like a lot of my early charts on like floppy disks.
Yeah, that's a drag,
which,
though.
Which,
how do you even recover?
I don't know. Yeah. It's like cassette tapes.
You could you could break into a museum and try to use their
yeah, their exactly.
Is the stuff that you have?
Take it to the Smithsonian.
This is stuff that you don't have hard copies of?
I probably have hard copies of most of it, but you know, I thought, oh, this is great. I'm backing it up.
Right.
It's all on floppy disks.
But I mean, then 10 years from now, we'll be saying the same thing about anything we're using. So
it's crazy.
Yeah, it really is, and it's moving so fast. And then one hard drive dies, and 10 years of your work are gone, or whatever it is. Yeah. That's why I always say, remember, kids, back it up in three places, or it doesn't exist.
And we're going to leave it there with Jeff Countryman. We'll go out listening to another track, Things We Say.
Oh, yeah. That's some Mojo with the harmonicas being sampled in that.
Mojo being an instrument that you play.
Sir Mojo, actually. Uh-huh. Yeah. No, that's an instrument I play in with Dave's band, actually, sometimes.
Dave
Douglas.
Right. Right, from A Noise from the Deep, the Greenleaf Music Podcast.
Also hosted by Michael Bates.
That's right. Thanks for coming by.
Thanks for having
me.
Good
to see you.
Good to see you guys, too.
Man.
All right.
That was our interview with Jeff Countryman, the biggest Star Wars fan that I know of in the world. And an incredibly talented and
versatile guy, for sure.
Multi-discipline, yeah. I you know, when I'm talking to young musicians, I point to Jeff and I say, you should try to be like him.
I want to try to be like him.
Yeah. When I grow up, I want to be Jeff Countryman. So what's happening, Michael?
Oh, you know, this and that. Listening to some music, talking to some people.
So I am reading this great book that Marietta gave me. It's called Bach, Music in the Castle of Heaven. It's by John Elliott Gardner.
The great conductor.
Musician. And it's great because he is really trying to get inside, you know, kind of Bach is a mysterious figure. There wasn't that much about him as a person who that survived. And so he's getting at the man by getting inside the music. It's very, very interesting. A lot of context about where the music came from, about that period. You know, he was born in 1685, along with a lot of other very important composers.
Right.
And one of the things that he did that I find a resonance with is that he set up a concert tour of playing 250 cantatas on their appropriate saints' days in the German cities where they were, where Bach worked. So all in the space of a year with his Baroque orchestra,
wow,
they played these 250 different cantatas.
And 250 different cities? No.
I don't think it was 250 different cities, but I think it was mostly in churches and venues that were there at the time, you know, in the early 18th century. By way of getting into it, he talks a lot about the creative process and about how appropriation works and how creative musicians, you know, borrow things from different places, and some of it comes from your family and some comes from other artists, and some of the influences may be things you're not even doing consciously. And so he doesn't, Gardner doesn't pretend to know, at least, well, I'm not, I haven't finished the book yet, so maybe he does by the end, but I doubt it.
Yeah.
He's more just making an examination and trying to go places that Bach biographers haven't gone up till now. And it's very interesting, and it's also brought me to listen again to some of the cantatas, you know, very profound, deep music. The project Pathways that I did last year, where all the pieces were based on one of the Bach chorales, Es ist genug, kind of led me in a direction. And so I've pulled out some cantata collections. We'll listen to a little bit of Ton Koopman, Amsterdam Baroque Orchestra.
And I think you found like the ultimate In Noise from the Deep cantata, right?
Well, yeah, this one, right, that this is number 131. And I guess it's very difficult for me to pronounce it in German. So I found somebody else who can speak German to say it.
Aus der Tiefe rufe ich, Herr, zu dir.
Nice.
So, yeah, that's the title. but from the deep, I cry, sir, to you. And it's very, very profound and
wait
beautiful
a minute.
Music.
I want to hear that one more time, if
really?
You don't mind. Yeah.
Aus der Tiefe rufe ich, Herr, zu dir.
So I apologize to all of our German listeners and enjoy this piece
from the
of
deep I cry.
Bach. And that's the music, and it's been a great pleasure sharing it with you. Thanks once again for listening to the Greenleaf Music Podcast, A Noise from the Deep. Write to us, podcast@greenleafmusic.com. You know, write a review. You know what to do. Please go
iTunes,
to iTunes and tell us what you think. Again, you know, a witty write-up will garner you mucho free stuff
and possibly
so cool.
You know, if we ever get around to it, Noise from the Deep coffee mug.